Today is Thursday, April 3rd, and this is the World Socialist Website. The Historic Significance of Trump's Fascist Assault on Science by Evan Blake. The initiation of mass firings of over 20,000 scientists and public health workers at the Department of Health and Human Services, or HHS, marks a historic turning point in the collapse of American democracy and the Trump administration's efforts to establish a fascist dictatorship in the United States. Trump's war on science and public health, overseen by the anti-vaccine conspiracy theorist Robert F. Kennedy Jr., has now evolved into a scorched-earth policy of social vandalism, in which all the medical and scientific gains made by countless scientists and public health workers are being decimated overnight. For Trump and the financial oligarchy he represents, the enemy in this war is the international working class, whom they are determined to reduce to conditions of industrial slavery and barbarism on a scale not seen since the Nazi regime of Adolf Hitler. Under the Orwellian banner, Make America Healthy Again, Trump and Kennedy are deliberately creating the conditions for the flourishing of infectious diseases, the proliferation of pseudoscience, and the steady decline of life expectancy for masses of workers across the U.S. and throughout the world. Tuesday's mass firings coincided with the swearing-in of Trump's new directors of the National Institute of Health, or NIH, Jay Bhattacharya, and the Food and Drug Administration, Martin Makary. Bhattacharya is most notorious for co-authoring the Great Barrington Declaration, the Herd Immunity Manifesto, that justifies a policy of mass infection, death, and debilitation with COVID-19. Makary adopted this policy, while both figures promoted anti-vaccine disinformation and denigrated virtually all other public health measures throughout the pandemic. Kennedy greeted their swearing-in Tuesday with the declaration, "The revolution begins today." By this, he meant a social counter-revolution against all remaining vestiges of public health and scientific integrity at the CDC, FDA, and every other HHS agency. It is impossible to succinctly present all that took place on April 1st, as thousands of employees at HHS and its 13 subsidiary agencies awoke to emails informing them of their firings. Among the most significant developments include the following. At the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, 880 of 1,100 employees were fired, eliminating research into mining safety, chemical exposure, and more. On March 20th, Trump signed an executive order to initiate the dismantling of the Department of Education. 80% of the staff at the CDC's Global Health Center were laid off, crippling outbreak detection in over 40 countries. The CDC's Chronic Disease Prevention Subagency was dissolved, ending diabetes and heart disease tracking in 30 states. Over 300 positions were cut at the HIV Prevention Division, with estimates that over 20 million patients across Africa will now be cut off from life-saving assistance through PEPFAR. The CDC's Environmental Health Science Division was eliminated, halting PFAS toxicity studies and more. The National Center for Injury Prevention and Control, or NCIPC, was disbanded, ending firearm mortality tracking. The entire staff of the FDA Center for Tobacco Products, or CTP, was terminated. At the NIH, the National Institute on Minority Health and Health Disparities was closed, ending $500 million in grants to address racial health disparities, and the National Institute of Nursing Research was shuttered. 450 of 900 employees at the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration were fired. At the Administration for Strategic Preparedness and Response, or ASPR, 80 employees were terminated, weakening national stockpile management and pandemic forecasting. Among those targeted were agency heads, with at least 9 directors of agencies either fired or placed on administrative leave, while several other senior leaders were reassigned. 5 of the 10 HHS regional offices were closed, including in Boston, New York City, Chicago, San Francisco, and Seattle. At numerous agencies, communications teams were gutted, preventing future notices on a wide range of critical health issues to both the American and world's populations. All of these savage cuts will have far-reaching global ramifications, but arguably the most ominous are those targeting agencies overseeing the nationwide outbreak of H5N1 bird flu among poultry and dairy farms. In addition to the aforementioned firings at the CDC's Global Health Center and ASPR, 140 staff were fired at the FDA Center for Veterinary Medicine, including critical leadership and administrative staff. These three centers collaborate with the USDA to track the spread of the bird flu, which numerous scientists have warned threatens to become the next pandemic. Historically, bird flu has had a 50% fatality rate among humans. Last month, Kennedy and USDA head Brooke Rollins both proposed to let the virus rip through poultry farms instead of culling infected birds. This insane policy, widely denounced by scientists, would effectively give the virus tens of millions of hosts to evolve, with researchers warning that only one mutation is needed for the development of human-to-human transmission. Were such a policy now put in place, there would be no effective mechanisms to track or report on the nationwide spread of bird flu, which could very well spark the next global pandemic. The events on Tuesday, which multiple sources have described as a bloodbath, follow a series of unprecedented attacks on public health and science by Trump and Kennedy, of which the following were most significant. On January 24th, Trump withdrew the U.S. from the World Health Organization, or WHO, and imposed unprecedented gag orders across all 13 HHS agencies. Thousands of pages of scientific information have been modified or removed from the websites of the CDC, NIH, FDA, and other HHS agencies, a form of modern-day book burning. On February 7th, NIH spending on facilities and administration was slashed by $4 billion, nearly 50% of the current $9 billion allocation, affecting research grants at universities nationwide. Kennedy has downplayed the worsening measles outbreak in Texas, instead promoting quack remedies like cod liver oil and initiating a fraudulent study into the link between vaccines and autism, to be headed by anti-vaccine activist Mark Geyer. Declaring the pandemic is over, the HHS has halted NIH-funded research into long COVID and next-generation vaccines. Last week, the HHS rescinded its scientific integrity policy, allowing political appointees to censor or alter studies contradicting administration narratives. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, cut 1,000 positions, including National Weather Service staff critical for hurricane tracking. The NIH has canceled all studies on transgender health care. The State Department has revoked hundreds of student visas via AI-driven social media monitoring, targeting pro-Palestine activists, including Columbia's Mahmoud Khalil and Cornell's Momodou Tal. On March 5th, Trump threatened to defund any institution allowing illegal protests, demanding expulsion or deportation of participants, with multiple campuses immediately complying with the orders. What emerges from this barrage of reaction is a clear and definite policy of fascist counter-revolution. Dominant sections of the American ruling class are determined to destroy all the social gains won by the working class during the 20th century, and they have selected Trump as their Führer to carry this out. The Nazi concept of Gleichschaltung, synchronization, or falling into line, entailed the subversion of academic freedom, the driving out of Jewish scientists, and the reshaping of German society into a fascist dictatorship, in the process undermining all of the core concepts of the Enlightenment, human progress, and philosophical materialism. Today, Trump demands the same falling into line, with Kennedy carrying this out in the sphere of public health. They are reviving the outlook advocated by Hermann Göring at a June 1934 speech in Wassertrudingen, when he declared, quote, "Real leaders are born of blood and soil and have no need for science and culture," unquote. What is now unfolding is a dramatic and sudden reversal of the nearly century-long dominance of American scientific prowess. Over the course of World War II, the United States emerged as the Global Center for Scientific Research and Innovation, with many of the above agencies either founded or reconstituted during this period. Europe's greatest scientists, including Albert Einstein and Enrico Fermi, fled fascism and sought refuge in the U.S. This initial brain drain, fueled by fascism, continued in the post-war period, as the U.S. became a magnet for top scientific talent from throughout the world. Through the deepening integration of these federal agencies with academia, numerous scientific breakthroughs were achieved, which have collectively saved billions of people from premature death, raised life expectancies globally, and profoundly shaped modern society. Among the greatest scientific achievements made through this collaboration included the development of mass production techniques for penicillin in the 1940s, vaccines to prevent polio, HPV, Ebola, COVID-19, and other pathogens, therapies and treatments for HIV/AIDS, bipolar disorder, breast cancer, heart disease, and a myriad of other chronic diseases, the Green Revolution in agriculture, the Human Genome Project, MRI technology, virtually all the advances associated with modern computing technologies and the internet, and literally thousands more medical and technological breakthroughs. This scientific progress was always bound up with and constrained by Cold War geopolitics and the efforts of American imperialism to undermine the Soviet Union, while access to higher education remained limited for large sections of the working class. But the advances made still had vast objective significance. With the coming to power of Reagan, the American ruling class initiated a social counter-revolution, steadily rolling back these social gains, imposing mass layoffs, beginning with the firing of the PATCO air traffic controllers, and funneling ever greater wealth to the corporate financial oligarchy. In the aftermath of September 11, 2001, these processes accelerated as the war on terror and decades of unending war required the diversion of ever greater resources to the military. Upon the outbreak of the COVID-19 pandemic, America's once preeminent health agencies were totally unprepared and easily subordinated to the pro-capitalist policies of first the Trump and then the Biden administrations. Outside of Operation Warp Speed and the rapid production of vaccines, the heads of the CDC, NIH, and other agencies collaborated in the bipartisan war on public health, which helped set the stage for the return of Trump. But the unfolding war on science and public health under the new Trump administration marks a qualitative turning point in this process. All scientific agencies and academic institutions are in a state of freefall, from which they will not recover under capitalism. Already a reverse brain drain is underway. A recent poll by the scientific journal Nature found that fully 75% of scientists in the U.S. are now considering leaving the country, with most eyeing Europe and Canada for relocation. Opposition is building among scientists as part of a growing radicalization of the American and international working class in response to the threat of fascism. An open letter written to the American people, which condemns Trump's wholesale assault on U.S. science, has now been signed by over 2,000 elected members of the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine. The defense of science and public health cannot be entrusted to the Democratic Party, which has fully enabled Trump's consolidation of a fascist government and facilitated the terrorizing of students on college campuses. It was Biden and the Democrats who fully implemented Trump's herd immunity policy of mass COVID-19 infection and death, while orchestrating the Israeli genocide of the Palestinians and the ruthless crackdown on student protesters. As with the right to defend democratic rights and to oppose war and genocide, the struggle for science and public health will only develop through the building of a socialist movement in the working class, the great progressive social force under capitalism. The Socialist Equality Party is leading this struggle, and we urge all those seeking to oppose Trump's building of a fascist dictatorship to join our ranks today. Trump's reciprocal tariffs escalate economic war against the world. by Nick Beams. The imposition of the new U.S. tariff regime, unveiled by President Trump yesterday, is a declaration of economic war against the rest of the world. It has been driven forward by two interconnected objectives. On the economic front, it seeks to extract hundreds of billions of dollars in tariff hikes, ultimately paid for by U.S. companies and consumers, to shore up the ever-worsening trade and financial position of the U.S., while weakening its global economic rivals, particularly China, to improve its trade position. It also aims to enhance U.S. military capacity by using tariffs to force companies, foreign and domestic, to increase the level of their operations on American soil, much of which is needed to supply the military. Under the new regime, the U.S. will impose reciprocal tariffs on a range of countries. The tariff is not determined by the tariff actually charged on U.S. exports. Rather, a number has been assigned to each of the countries involved. This includes not only the tariff charged on U.S. exports, but all measures such as subsidies, regulations, biosecurity measures for agricultural products, and the value of the currency, which the U.S. considers to have the same effect as a tariff in discriminating against the U.S. The reciprocal tariff to be charged has been set at half that number. Thus, for China, a key target of the new regime, the number assigned to it by U.S. economic officials is 67, and the reciprocal tariff will be 34%. This will be on top of the 20% tariff already imposed on Chinese goods, bringing the total tariff level to 54%. One of the immediate effects of the tariff hike, set to come into effect on April 9th, will be a major price increase for a vast range of goods made in China and purchased by American consumers. The European Union, which Trump has denounced as an organization set up to quote-unquote screw the U.S., has been assigned the number 39, and the tariff imposed will be 20%. Southeast Asian countries, a number of which have become a center of manufacturing operations for many companies seeking to escape the effect of trade bans on China, will be hit even harder. The tariff for Thailand will be 36%, Malaysia 24%, and Vietnam 46%. The tariff for South Korea, already hit by the 25% tariff on foreign-made cars, which came into effect at midnight, will be 25%. And the list goes on. All countries not hit with a reciprocal tariff will have a 10% tariff imposed on their exports, in a measure aimed, in part, at preventing companies from transferring some of their operations to countries not specifically targeted by the U.S. Now there is nowhere in the world they can go. Trump began his presentation of the new tariff regime in the White House Rose Garden with his now customary rant against the rest of the world. Quote, "For decades, our country has been looted, pillaged, raped, and plundered by nations near and far, both friend and foe alike," he said, remarking later that in some cases, friends had been worse than foes. Quoting, "For years, hard-working American citizens were forced to sit on the sidelines as other nations got rich and powerful, much of it at our expense, but now it's our turn to prosper," unquote. However, the repeated claims by Trump that the tariff measures are going to produce a new golden age for the U.S. are a fiction. They will not bring down inflation, but raise prices on a vast range of goods. The auto tariffs are set to raise prices on cars from anywhere between $3,000 and $10,000. Thousands of jobs will be lost, and any new plants set up in the U.S. will be highly automated, with a small labor force to cut costs. Furthermore, the so-called American-made is non-existent. Every car in the world, including in the U.S., is the product of a complex international division of labor. For example, the Ford F-150 pickup truck, one of the standard bearers for what is regarded as an American car, comprises thousands of parts imported from all over the world. Trump claims the new tariff regime is a magic cure-all that is going to both pay down U.S. government debt and reduce the trade deficit. But estimates of the expected tariff revenue, according to Capital Economics, are that at most it will bring in around $800 billion. The interest bill alone on the U.S. debt, now at around $36 trillion and rising, is $1 trillion every year as it fast becomes the biggest item in the budget. The trade policies of the Trump administration are internally contradictory. On the one hand, it wants to expand U.S. export markets by weakening the value of the U.S. dollar, thereby making American goods cheaper in world markets. But maintenance of its reserve currency status, which Trump regards as an existential issue for the U.S., losing it, he said, would be the equivalent of losing a war, depends on a strong dollar. Moreover, however much Trump harks back to President William McKinley and his tariff regime at the turn of the 20th century, the U.S. economy has long outgrown its national borders and is dependent on an expanding global economy. But the global economy, already experiencing some of the lowest growth in decades, is now about to take another major blow. According to the calculations published earlier this week in the Financial Times, the overall hit to the world economy could be in the order of $1.4 trillion if, as is virtually certain, there is retaliation. On top of this, there is growing nervousness in financial markets, already in a fragile condition because of the rise in global debt, both of governments and corporations. This was expressed in the letter by Larry Fink, the chief executive of BlackRock, the world's largest asset management firm, to shareholders this week. He said, quote, "Protectionism has returned in force," unquote, and that in his conversations, people were, quote, "more anxious about the economy than at any time in recent memory," unquote. Recent memory, it should be noted, includes the global financial crisis of 2008 and the financial crisis of March 2020, which saw the freezing of the U.S. Treasury bond market. Trump is imposing the sweeping tariff regime under the International Emergency Economic Powers Act of 1977, passed under the Democratic Carter administration, which gives him the power to declare a national emergency if there is an unusual and extraordinary threat from outside the U.S. that impacts national security, foreign policy, or the economy. The so-called fact sheet issued by the White House said that the national emergency was the result of the large and persistent trade deficit. It was $918 billion in 2024, an increase of 17% from the previous year. The White House statement made clear that military considerations are a central driving force of the new tariff regime. The reciprocal tariffs are directed against countries, quote, "with which the U.S. has the largest trade deficit," unquote. But virtually every time economic matters are raised in the document, they are linked with military issues. It said that, quote unquote, "pernicious economic policies and practices of trading partners undermined U.S. ability to produce goods for the public," quote, "and the military threatening national security," unquote. It declared, quote, "Made in America is not just a tagline, it's an economic and national security priority of this administration." U.S. stockpiles of military goods were, quote, "too low to be compatible with national defense interests," unquote, and developments in biomanufacturing, batteries, and microelectronics had to be made to, quote, "support defense needs," unquote. Explaining the focus on non-tariff barriers, particularly with regard to China, it said they had not only undermined U.S. competitiveness, but threatened, quote, "U.S. economic and national security by increasing our reliance on foreign-controlled supply chains for critical industries, as well as everyday goods," unquote. The fact sheet outlined the central core of the economic war. It said, quote, "Today's IEEPA order also contains modification authority, allowing President Trump to increase the tariff if trading partners retaliate or decrease the tariffs if trading partners take significant steps to remedy non-reciprocal trade agreements and align with the United States on economic and national security matters," unquote. In other words, get in line or you will be hit, and even harder if you lift a finger. The tariff measures are not just a preparation for war, they are certainly that, and in earlier times could have been considered an act of war. Today, the lines between the states of war and peace are blurred, as the war on the economic front is directly tied to the expansionist drive of U.S. imperialism, the threats to make Canada the 51st state, the ongoing operations to take over Greenland, and the increased bombing of the Houthis in Yemen, to name just a few. This has been Paul Fuller for the World Socialist Website.
The World Socialist Website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist Website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.